Welcome once again to our program, Salvation History, the New Testament, the story of the redemption of all mankind, the liberating of Jesus' sacrificial death on Calvary to help us be free enough to follow and get to heaven. I'm your host, Monsignor Larry Moran, chaplain at the Carmelite Monastery and John Paul II Catholic High in Terre Haute, Indiana. Our guest, as usual, is Ron Eldred, who is teacher at Religion and History, John Paul II Catholic High. And Ron, we've been talking about the hidden life of Jesus, and so many of these pseudo-gospels, like the Gospel of Thomas or Matthew or James, which are available in any public library or any bookstore, tell these fantastic stories about Jesus, but they're all legends. Say one thing about the one where he was helping Jesus, or helping Joseph in the carpenter shop.
Oh, the one where he stretched a board to make it long enough to fit whatever he was making.
Making a bed. Okay, well, there's so many. They're kind of beautiful in a way, and some are so absurd about Jesus cursing somebody, he caused him problems. So they're all legends, and the scriptures themselves don't really talk about hardly anything in the hidden life of Jesus for some 28 or 30 years. Well, let's go on about Jesus, since he knew everything in his divinity, but didn't he have to learn from experience in his humanity? This is a real mystery we're dealing with.
Yes. Some theologians and scripture scholars have said over the past few centuries that Jesus was ignorant of many things. And this is blatantly false. Because being a divine person, Jesus possessed infinite divine knowledge at all times. Therefore, he could not have been ignorant of anything. Jesus Christ is a divine person. Not a human person, he's a divine person, and a divine person must know everything. Even in his human intellect, from the time of his conception, he saw God face to face, the beatific vision. During his entire life on earth, Jesus knew all things by virtue of his immediate and uninterrupted vision of God. Not only did he possess a direct vision of God at all times, but he also possessed infused knowledge of all created things. Since he is like us in all things but sin, for a divine person cannot sin, in his humanity he could learn by experience and through the senses, as all we humans, you know, have to learn. Of course, in his divinity he knew all things, but in his human nature he learned things that he already knew in his divine intellect. For example, when Jesus learned to be a carpenter from his foster father, St. Joseph, he was learning in his humanity what he already knew in his divinity.
Now, this has caused a lot of discussion, at least in the recent past. We ask our audience to bear with us that we're dealing with a mystery. How God and man can be in one person, Jesus. Well, this would mean that he had to learn to write, to read, to learn his religion from Mary and Joseph and his teachers?
Yes, the Catholic Encyclopedia has this to say about Jesus' learning. Quote, the Jews tell us that Jesus had not passed through the training of the rabbinic schools. How doth this man know letters, having never learned? The same question is asked by the people of Nazareth, who add, is not this the carpenter? St. Justin is authority for the statement that Jesus specifically made plows and yokes, talking about St. Justin Martyr. Back to the quote. Though it is not certain that at the time of Jesus' elementary schools existed in the Jewish villages, it may be inferred from the Gospels that Jesus knew how to read and to write. At an early age, he must have learned the so-called Shema and the Hallel, or Psalm 113 through 118. He must have been familiar with the other parts of the scriptures too, especially the Psalms and the prophetic books, as he constantly refers to them in his public life. Still quoting. It is also asserted that Palestine at the time of Jesus Christ was practically bilingual, so that Jesus must have spoken Aramaic and Greek. The indications that he was acquainted with Hebrew and Latin are rather slight. The public teaching of Jesus shows that he was a close observer of the sights and sounds of nature, of the habits of all classes of men, for these are the usual sources of his illustrations, end of quote. But nonetheless, all the things that he learned in his humanity, he already knew in his divinity, everything that we just mentioned in the quote there. But he had not experienced them in a human way.
Okay. Now, the church has always taught us that Jesus is like us in all things, according to the scripture quote, except sin.
That's right, because Jesus is fully human. He possessed a human nervous system and human senses. Consequently, he could suffer and feel emotions just like us. In fact, theologians tell us that Jesus was created with a human nature, quote, extraordinarily sensitive to suffering, since this was the method chosen for our redemption, end of quote. It is said that when he did feel emotions, they were always directed toward a proper object and always totally in harmony with his intellect and will. Moreover, since the divine person Jesus Christ is both God and man, it's totally correct to say that God suffered, God died, God was hungry, God was sorrowful. It is also correct to say that a man rose from the dead, a man worked miracles, a man offered a perfect sacrifice to the Father, a man sits to the right hand of the Father, a man will come to judge the living and the dead. It was quoting there from the source.
When you put it that way, it's very startling that God is hungry. God suffered, because there have been heresies in the church that said Jesus really didn't suffer, that he really wasn't like us in all things except sin. So I think when you made that statement, Ron, we have to keep together the idea he's truly God and truly man. Then how that works out in practice,
it can be explained up to a point, rationally, intellectually, but still beyond that, it's a mystery.
Dealing with mystery. All right, since Jesus is a divine person, that is God, how could he die?
Well, that's a good point. He is a divine person. He's not a human person. And there's no doubt that the eternal spirit of Christ can't die. So the question is, who or what did die on Calvary? The first person of the Trinity couldn't die. Yet his human nature couldn't die any more than it could be born. Only persons die or are born, not natures. So in what sense Jesus died, I think, is one of the great mysteries of our faith. Perhaps St. Thomas or other great theologians have explained what it means that God died on the cross, but I guess that we will have to be content with this matter as a mystery that will be answered for us when we hopefully see God face to face in heaven. Now, when we get to the crucifixion and the resurrection, we are going to come back to this subject in some detail. So we'll look at a little bit of the theology of this whole issue then.
Okay. And we always have to remember at the end of the day, we're dealing with a mystery we cannot fully comprehend. Well, what about Jesus lost and found in the temple? That's a very fascinating story. We have it in one of the windows here at St. Patrick, Mary and Joseph seeking the child Jesus who's lost and teaching the teachers in the temple and listening to them.
The Catechism tells us, and I'll quote from the Catechism, quote, "The finding of Jesus in the temple is the only event that breaks the silence of the Gospels about the hidden years of Jesus. Here Jesus lets us catch a glimpse of the mystery of his total consecration to a mission that flows from his divine sonship. Did you not know that I must be about my Father's work?" Mary and Joseph did not understand these words, but they accepted them in faith. Mary kept all these things in her heart during the years that Jesus remained hidden in the silence of an ordinary life. This is from the Catechism, paragraph 534. St. Luke probably got the story from the Blessed Mother herself. And he writes, quote, "Now his parents went to Jerusalem every year at the feast of the Passover. And when he was 12 years old, they went up according to custom. And when the feast was ended, as they were returning, the boy Jesus stayed behind in Jerusalem. His parents did not know it, but supposing him to be in the company, they went a day's journey. And they sought him among their kinfolk and acquaintances. When they did not find him, they returned to Jerusalem seeking him." This story is told in Luke chapter 2, verses 40 through 45.
Ron, was there any other reason that the family would go to Jerusalem at this time other than the Passover?
No doubt Jesus was taking this trip to undergo the Jewish rite a passage of male youth into manhood called Bar Mitzvah. Bar Mitzvah took place on the 13th birthday of a boy and signifies his passage into manhood. It literally means son of the covenant. And of course, we refer to that as the Old Covenant of the Old Testament, the Old Covenant that God made with Abraham and then renewed it with Isaac and Jacob, and then, of course, with Moses and then with David. And we looked at that in some detail when we looked at the series on the Old Testament. So when Jesus underwent the ceremony, he was incorporated into the covenant. This probably happened in the year 8 AD or 9 AD, somewhere during that period. Almost the entire family, as well as other families, would have made the 90-mile trip to Jerusalem, including aunts and uncles and cousins. And they'd all would have traveled together. Scholars have estimated that well over 1 million Jews made the trip to Jerusalem for the Passover, and they came from all over the Roman Empire and beyond that. Many, if not most of them, camped on the hills surrounding the city. There wouldn't have been room, you know, in the city for them to stay, at least lots of them. Perhaps as long as a week or more they camped. One tradition has it that the extended family of Jesus camped every year at the base of the Mount of Olives, near the Garden of Gethsemane, just east of the city. On the return trip, thinking that Jesus was with some of his cousins and friends, the parents, they wouldn't have noticed that he was missing until nightfall. Since it was extremely dangerous to travel at night, it was dangerous enough to travel in the day, the frightened parents probably waited until daybreak to return to Jerusalem. The returning trip would have taken the better part of a day. So they wouldn't have arrived at the city until late afternoon or early evening. And keep in mind that the city and its surrounding environs would have been packed, and hundreds of thousands of pilgrims would have been in the city, and tens of thousands would have been on the temple grounds. St. Luke continues the story saying, quote, "After 3 days they found him in the temple, sitting among the teachers, listening to them and asking them questions. And all who heard him were amazed at his understanding and his questions and his answers. When they saw him, they were astonished, and his mother said to him, 'Son, why have you treated us so? Behold, your father and I have been looking for you anxiously.' And he said to them, 'How is it that you have sought me? Did you not know that I would be in my father's house?' And they did not understand the saying which he spoke to them. And he went down with them and came to Nazareth and was obedient to them. And his mother kept all these things in her heart. And Jesus increased in wisdom and in stature and in favor with God and man."
I think, and you can correct me on this, Ron, but that the only place where Mary refers to Joseph as the father of Jesus, "Your father and I have been seeking you," all the other times it says something about Jesus being the adopted son of Joseph or the
foster father
yes. And the like.
Yes, I don't know of any other place where
okay. Well, Jesus advanced or grew in wisdom. What does that mean, that he grew in wisdom? Because a little bit before you talked about, here he is, God, with the intellect of God as well as that of man.
Yes, being infinite, obviously, in his divinity, he couldn't have grown in wisdom. So what does that mean? I think that's what you're asking, and some modern theologians and scripture scholars have questioned that Jesus always knew who he was. That his awareness of his divinity developed only as he grew into manhood and during his public ministry. The passage above makes it perfectly clear that Jesus knew precisely who he was at all times, even in his youth. In fact, he knew who he was even in his infancy. And how can this be then? Because Jesus is both God and man. He possesses both divine and human natures. He is literally the God-man. And this union of natures is called a hypostatic union. And the two natures are united in one divine person. He's not a human person as well. He's only a divine person. In his divinity, he is the second person, the Son of the Holy Trinity. In his humanity, Jesus is entirely like us in all things but sin. However, since the two natures are inseparably bound together, Jesus in his humanity always knew everything in his divinity. So even the little infant Jesus knew everything and possessed infinite power as well. But of course, Jesus is humble. And as a human being, he always took a subordinate role to his Father, to whom he is co-equal and co-eternal. Therefore, there are times during his public ministry that Jesus pretended to be ignorant of the future because it wasn't his human role to reveal these things.
Okay, again, dealing with that great mystery of Jesus, one person with two natures, divine nature and a human nature.
And as I said, when we get over to the crucifixion and the resurrection, we'll go into that topic a little bit more.
Fine. Ron, tradition tells us that St. Joseph died when Jesus was about 20 or so. What can you say about that?
Yes, that's correct. And because he died in the arms of Mary and Jesus, he is known as the patron of a happy death. The reason I think he probably died about that time, there's a tradition that he did, was that he no longer comes up. He doesn't come up in the Gospels again after that. Afterwards, Jesus would have supported himself and his mother by plying the trade of his father, carpentry, that his foster father had taught him. He had to learn the trade from Joseph, as we earlier said, because even though he knew everything and could do anything in his divinity, in his humanity, he had to acquire knowledge and to learn tasks, just like we do. In his role as carpenter, he probably made wooden implements, such as plows and yokes and rakes and other implements. The Catechism sums up the matter beautifully. Quote, by his obedience to Mary and Joseph, as well as by his humble work during the long years in Nazareth, Jesus gives us the example of holiness in the daily life of family and work. This is found in paragraph 564 of the Catechism.
Always try to remind young people, particularly in high school, that Jesus, when he was 12, the last thing we learn about him, he goes back from Jerusalem where he was lost in the temple and found. And the last line we know before his public life is that he was obedient to Mary and Joseph. Here is God made man, 12 years old, being obedient to Mary his mother and Joseph his foster father. So surely it could teach us some kind of humility about being obedient to our parents. Are there any additional remarks, Ron, before we move on past the hidden years of Jesus, before we go to his public life or public ministry?
Only that the Catholic Catechism states, quote, the hidden life of Jesus extending through 30 years is far different from what one should have expected in the case of a person who is adored by his followers as their God and revered as their Savior. This is an indirect proof for the credibility of the gospel story, end of quote.
Okay, now an indirect proof for the credit for the believability of the gospel story, meaning that they wouldn't have just made that up because it's so difficult to deal with.
Yes.
So that the gospels often say things that if they were being made up, they would certainly wouldn't, like for instance, they probably wouldn't have put in the denial of Peter if they were trying to make up some stories about Peter, because it certainly isn't complimentary to him.
No, they wouldn't want to show him in a bad light.
Right. Okay, well, I think this brings us to the public life of Jesus, perhaps 3 years that he's out working among the people, visiting town to town. Let's go on to his public life. Public ministry is 3 years of really in person-to-person contact with the people of the Holy Land.
It's a little difficult to tell the story of Jesus' public ministry because the Gospels were not intended to be a biography of Jesus' life. They were intended to tell us what Jesus taught and did, but not necessarily in the chronological order in which he said and did them. The three synoptic Gospels, that is Matthew, Mark, and Luke, tell a similar story, but the events described in each don't always follow each other in the exact chronological order. Moreover, the synoptic Gospels vary considerably from John's Gospel on many points. In fact, they differ with each other on many points, too. Ever since early critics of Christianity tried to discredit the Christian religion by pointing out apparent contradictions and inconsistencies in the Gospels, defenders of the faith have composed harmonies of the Gospels, glossing them over. For example, Tatian and St. Augustine were among the early harmonizers, and many have tried since with different degrees of success. In fact, this series is itself an attempt to kind of harmonize the Gospels. In fact, we spent a lot of time talking about these kind of things in our series, Interpreting the Bible Through the Ages.
Okay, so the time sequence and the way events happen aren't necessarily accurately harmonized in the Matthew, Mark, and Luke. Well, how old was Jesus when he began his public ministry?
He waited until he was about 30 years of age to begin his public ministry. I have read estimates as high as 34, but I think that's probably a little high, quite a bit high. He did this because in his society, men didn't enter into public life until, you know, at least that age. He wouldn't have been as readily accepted if he had been much younger than this, because the people at the time placed a premium on life experience. So, you know, an older person was, the more experience he would, supposedly be.
And that wasn't true just of the rabbis. It was true just for any person who's going to be a teacher?
Yes, anybody going into a public life.
Well, how long did Jesus' public ministry last, as far as we can ascertain?
According to the 1911 edition of the Catholic Encyclopedia, the chronology of Jesus' life creates a number of problems for the interpreter, and the main ones being the duration of his public ministry and his successive journeys about Palestine. In regard to the duration, at one extreme, Saint Irenaeus suggested a period of 15 years. He was writing in the 2nd century AD. And at the other end, Saint Clement of Alexandria and other patristic fathers who allow for only 1 year. So here we have a range running everywhere from 1 year to 15 years all over the place.
I didn't know Irenaeus had guessed 15 years. Never heard that before. That's interesting. Well, the Synoptic Gospels say very little about the time sequence or the chronology of Jesus' public life. Doesn't this make it hard to establish the time or the duration of his public ministry, how long it was?
Yes, it does, but it's not impossible. The Synoptic Gospels, that is Matthew, Mark, and Luke, make very little reference to time in Jesus' ministry. All three mention the Passover in which he was killed, Matthew 12:1, Mark 2:23, Luke 6:1. And the Spring Festival is recorded in all three Gospels as well, which was probably the Spring Festival of Pentecost, which followed 50 days after Passover. The Jews harvested the grain around the end of May after planting in March or April. And if we follow the sketchy chronology of the Synoptics, Jesus' public ministry would have lasted only about a year if we just follow Matthew, Mark, and Luke, making St. Clement's estimate of 1 year pretty accurate.
Okay, but doesn't St. John mention as many as three Passovers during Jesus' public life?
Yes, he does. He distinctly mentions three Passovers, and possibly a fourth. The first of the three occurs shortly after Jesus' baptism, the last coinciding with his passion, meaning that at least 2 years must have intervened between the two events to provide sufficient time, of course, for the Passover mentioned in John 6:4. Although there are biblical scholars who maintain that Jesus attended four Passovers, thus extending his public ministry to over 3 years, most biblical scholars favor the view that his public ministry lasted just a little over 2 years, maybe 2.5 years.
In the little bit of time we have, Ron, let's talk about some of the major Jewish festivals and major feast days. We know that Jesus attended at least three Passovers. Did he go there for any other festivals or purposes?
Well, it's probable that he did. There were three agricultural-related pilgrimage festivals mandated in Exodus 23, 14 through 17. There was a seven-day springtime festival of unleavened bread around the barley harvest, an early spring festival of harvest when the wheat ripens, and an autumn festival of ingathering when olives, grapes, and other fruits were harvested.
Okay, wasn't the barley harvest eventually combined with Passover?
Yes, it was. The Passover celebration, which commemorated the original Exodus when the Hebrews came out of Egypt, was eventually combined with the spring barley harvest. And according to a prominent biblical scholar, Father Felix Just, the Passover was originally celebrated in each family's house, where an unblemished lamb was slaughtered and eaten and its blood sprinkled on the doorpost with a branch of a hyssop plant. The lamb was slaughtered on the afternoon of the 14th day of the month of Nisan, or Abib, called the Day of Preparation, and the Passover meal eaten just after sunset, that is the beginning of the 15th day in the Jewish calendar. These Jewish dates correspond to March and April months in our Julian or our Gregorian calendar now. The seven-day feast of unleavened bread is also related to the Exodus, when the Hebrews did not even have time to let bread rise as they were leaving Egypt. The combined festivals became a major pilgrimage feast, with the people going to the Jerusalem temple to offer the sacrificial lamb. And it is these festivals that St. John is referring to when he claims that Jesus attended three Passovers during the public ministry. So there was a combination of Passover with this harvest.
Okay, well, we're just getting into these three big celebrations, but our time has run out, so we'll take it up next time. May God bless you all, always, and in all ways.